Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Griefsters. I hope you're having an okay week wherever you are listening and that you are coping with the cold and dark if you are listening in the Northern Hemisphere where we're getting very wintry indeed. And yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for your lovely words about this season, season 10. I still can't believe it. I will say, as I've been saying for a while, just because it's what I've been working on for the past 3 years, the book You Are Not Alone is out very soon. It's out January the 19th, 2023. You can pre-order it now. Please do pre-order. It makes a huge difference to authors like myself. It all counts towards the first week of sales and is just makes all the bookshops take notice if people pre-order. So if you think you're going to buy it anyway, please do pre-order. I'll be so, so grateful. And we're having a book launch as well at Earth in Hackney on January the 17th. If you head to Fane Productions, F-A-N-E, Fane Productions, you can get tickets. And I will be interviewed by Fee Glover, the amazing Fee Glover of formerly of Fortunately Podcast, now of Times Radio Off Air with Jane Garvey. Brilliant podcast that I love so much, the new one and the old one. Big fans of both of them. So head towards Fame Productions to get tickets for that. This week is, well, they're all special episodes, but this week, I don't know, it feels pretty special. And I am going to give a trigger warning just to warn you, this episode is about child loss, specifically baby loss. This week, I'm talking to the very incredible Charlotte Bennett. Charlotte is the co-artistic director of the award-winning theatre company Payne's Plough. They're a touring theatre company. They support new writing. They've produced some incredible works of theatre over the years. And they're absolutely brilliant. Charlotte got in touch with me as she has had quite the journey from grief. Yeah, I almost don't know where to begin, really, with what Charlotte has had to go through. Charlotte's baby Margot died just 24 hours after she was born. She was born 42 weeks, and you'll hear Charlotte explain she died from an infection. She was alive for a day, and Charlotte talks about that so beautifully in this episode about wanting to celebrate that and, yeah, and to acknowledge that and to mean that she was here, she did live, and it really is such a poignant conversation. And Charlotte also, very briefly, after losing Margot, mere months, lost her mum to pancreatic cancer. Her mum, Alicia, she was only 68, and we talk a lot about how crap pancreatic cancer is. Charlotte is not alone in this episode. She is joined at the very end by her niece, Illy. Charlotte and Illy had had a lot of conversations about grief, and Charlotte really wanted Illy to come in and talk to me about grief and share some of the conversations and the thoughts that she had had about grief. So this episode is really, yeah, it was really special. It's one of the first in real life ones I've done since the pandemic, and it was a real privilege to get in the room with Charlotte and Illy and talk about Margot and Alicia and a lot of other people who they had lost in their family in the past few years. It's, as ever, it's not always an easy listen, but it is a really important one, I think, in terms of baby loss and in terms of supporting anyone you might know who's been through, you know, what is not an uncommon experience. And just a really, I felt really lucky that Charlotte came in to share Margot's story with us and her mum, Alicia, as well. And thank you to Illy, who, yeah, is, I should say, is only 7. And as you will hear, is incredibly eloquent and talented. And it was really lovely to speak to them both. At the end, I'll be mentioning this again. They do have a fundraising page, which you can donate to. The Margot Alicia Bennett Brighter Future Fund they set up to raise money for Great Ormond Street Hospital. So I just want to mention that link in case you don't get to the end. It's www.justgiving.com/team/Margot, M-A-R-G-O-T. Please do give if you can afford to spare some pennies for Great Ormond Street. Here's Charlotte. So Charlotte, who are we remembering today?
So it's a little bit complicated. is my life. So we're remembering my daughter, Margot Alicia Bennett, who died on the 3rd of July 2021. But then 7 months after my daughter died, we found out my mum had pancreatic cancer, which I know you know all too well.
And, it's the shit one.
It's the shit one, yeah, exactly. Like, oh, if I, because I've got to be obsessed with listening to the podcast. I mean, I think I've listened to every episode now, actually. Yeah, I'm a bit of a weird mega fan. But yeah, I was really like, oh no.
You know, oh, I feel like,
but no, but in a good way, you know, in a way it's probably useful to be.
I prepped you.
Prepared, yeah. So 7 months after Margot died, my mum, Alicia Bennett.
So she was Alicia Bennett and Margot was Margot Alicia,
yes,
Bennett, right? Yeah,
so
okay.
My mum was my best friend, so she was named after my mum. And she died 4 months after her diagnosis, which was on the 30th of June 2022. So that was 2 days before Margot's first anniversary.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so there. And I was thinking about this on the way here because I was going, I know if my mum was here, she'd go, oh, Charlotte, talk about Margot, not me. Make it about you. You were going to talk about Margot because when we first spoke, that was the original plan. And then kind of one of the reasons why it obviously all got delayed was I went, oh my goodness, my mum's
yeah,
got this
you first
thing.
Contacted me to talk about Margot, and we were like, absolutely, let's make this happen. And one of the reasons we were excited to do this is we have someone else who's going to join us in a minute, who is your niece, Illy, who is 7 years old.
Yeah.
And you wrote to me and you said, well, Illy and I have been having these amazing conversations about grief and death, and I would like to capture these. And I was like, wow, yes, that sounds amazing. And then, I got an email from you saying, oh, my mum's been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. I was obviously very much like, take your time. This is, and I get in trouble for saying it's a shit one because obviously all cancers are shit. It is, the reason I say it's a shit one is it tends not to have any symptoms. And so people, by the time
she
you
had
find
no
it,
symptoms.
It
was like out, completely out the blue. Just completely out of the blue. And she was 68 when she died, and she was completely healthy. And then just went yellow one day, and then
That's exactly what happened to my dad. Just went yellow, and everyone was like, "Oh, that's not right, is it? You shouldn't be yellow."
And Margot was born at Homerton Hospital, and my mum was diagnosed at Homerton Hospital.
Oh Lord!
So it's all very who were amazing in both cases. I should say that, absolutely amazing. But just a year, you know, and although we're not here to talk about these two people as well, I should mention that there are two other people. I feel like I'm laughing nervously because I'm like, surely people think I'm making this up, but there were two other people close to me that also died this year. So my mother-in-law Mary Armstrong and my auntie Dorothy Moroney. So they both died in April this year as well, but we haven't got time to talk about it.
They're all welcome.
They're all here.
Everybody's welcome.
Yeah. I'm aiming to do a Kayla Llewellyn and get back on.
come back.
But I should give them
a mention. Let's start with Margot. So you she died in 2021.
Yes.
So you were pregnant in 2020.
Yes.
I'm guessing full lockdown
situation. Yeah, lockdown pregnancy, yeah.
Which, yeah, must have been... And it was that was your first pregnancy.
Yeah.
So that must have been tricky in itself. And then would you mind talking about what happened? How did Margot die?
Yeah, so she was a full-term baby. She was actually almost 42 weeks when she was born. She did not want to come out. And I went into... So everything was seemingly fine. I had a very straightforward pregnancy. It was very much like, oh, yeah, fine. Yeah. See you on the induction day if you don't come before. And I went into labour and had a very, very quick labour. So my labour was like 3 hours from start to finish, from first contraction to baby out.
Oh, my God.
And for a first baby, yeah, I'm told that's crazy. And when I went into Homerton, she was born sort of 20 minutes after I arrived. So very, very speedy. And I didn't know anything was wrong. Or we didn't, me and Alan, my partner, didn't know anything was wrong until I was in the active labour part. I was pushing.
Yeah.
And they said her heart's decelerating and we need to get this baby out. And... They sort of said, you know, I think they were debating whether to give me a C-section because I could hear them going, oh, you know, what do we do here? This baby needs to come out quickly. And I remember the doctor looked at me and she said, this baby's coming now, isn't she? And I said, yeah, she's coming now. Like, I was like, she's halfway out. And I said, okay, well, the only job you've got to do is to push. And I remember Alan had a Lucozade and I just turned to Alan and I went, Lucozade. And he passed his Lucozade and I just did a massive swing of the Lucozade and then honestly just pushed for my life, you know, because I was like, this baby's in trouble, get the baby out. And honestly, after about three pushes, she was delivered.
Wow.
And the first time, I was thinking about this on the way here, the first time I really knew something was wrong was they held her up and I thought they were bringing her towards me.
Oh.
And instead they were cutting the cord. And I remember thinking, oh, I wrote down on my little birth preferences thing. I wanted Alan to cut the cord or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then I think it just sort of dawned on me, okay, something's not right here. And they didn't bring her towards me. They took her over to a table where they resuscitated her.
Oh.
So I was watching that happen and I think just maybe, I don't know, the adrenaline of giving birth and, you know, wishful thinking, I don't know, but I thought, it's fine. And then it just all started to take a long time. And they have a timer on where the baby's put, and it was at 19 minutes, and I could see they were still working on her.
Oh, Charlotte. Jesus.
And so then very quickly they were like, okay, we need to stitch you up. So they were stitching me up whilst she was being resuscitated in the room because of, they kind of wanted to do everything very quickly. And this doctor came over to talk to me, and he was the only doctor that sort of messed it up, really, in his communication. And actually, to be fair to him, I know from the whole investigation went on that afterwards he went away and he went, oh my God, he went straight to his supervisor and said, I completely messed this up. I don't know why I did this. Like, so, you know, everyone's able to make mistakes and learn from them. So,
yeah. But still, it still leaves.
He walked over to me and he said, I'm very sorry to tell you, this is while I'm having my vagina stitched up, I'm very sorry to tell you that your baby has brain damage. And I just went, okay.
Oh my God.
And he said, we don't, and he was sort of panicking, and I could feel the panic in his voice. He was going, we don't know what, you know, to what degree, we don't know whether this will be learning difficulties or cerebral palsy.
And you're literally having your vagina stitched up? Like,
yeah,
what?
Yeah. And the woman doing my stitches, I could see her looking up at him, being like shut up.
Mate, leave it, walk away.
Yeah.
Just stop what you're doing.
Yeah. And,
start again.
And I just kept turning to Alan and going, what's he saying? And we were just dumbfounded. And then,
you're in such a state at that point.
Yeah.
You're in such a state and people could say anything to you. You don't know. It is such a weird place to be, having a human removed from you.
Yeah.
Like, how can you take anything in?
And he sort of went, you know, it could be really bad or it could be not so bad, and we need to go and put her in an induced coma sort of thing. And then they took her out of the room.
So I
just all kind of a whirlwind. And Alan called my mum and she came in and then Alan went to go and see Margot, and it was when he came back in the room and he just said, oh, it's not good, Chas. And Alan's a very positive person.
Yeah.
And I just knew, you know, something's not right here. And she spent the day sort of fighting off what turned out to be a very severe infection that she'd got right at the end of her life. Also she'd passed meconium, you know, the baby's first poop.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she'd inhaled it all. And she just had this combination of things that just assaulted her.
Oh.
And she was kind of fluctuating throughout the day in the intensive care unit, and then she just kind of really deteriorated. So they transferred her to Great Ormond Street for a process called ECMO, where they sort of take the blood out and cleanse it and put it back in. And it's very, obviously, for a less than one day old baby, a very intense procedure. But they said, we think this is one thing that might help.
Yeah.
So we went in a high-speed ambulance, me, Alan and Margot, after I've just given birth, like 16 hours ago. to Great Ormond Street. And by the time she got there, she wasn't able to have it because she was not well enough. She wasn't going to survive it. So they said to us we could go and be with her when she died. And I'd never touched her at this point. So I'd never.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So the first time I held her was as she died. Yeah. So she just, yeah. It was, she died just one day old. She was just past one day old. Yeah. And my mum was there. My mum managed to make it in. Oh. And you know, they say people still hang on.
Yeah.
They said to her, she's got minutes. And they said, but call your family. And I called my brother and my sister, my mum were all really, really close. And I said, you know, this is happening. Come, but don't rush because she's maybe got minutes. And she carried on for about an hour. And as they arrived, she then started to die. So I held her, she died, and that was the first time I held her. And I just really felt she needed a cuddle from her mum.
Oh, Charlotte.
Yeah.
Of course she did. Oh, yeah. My God. Of course she needed a cuddle from her mum.
And the hardest thing, well, not the hardest thing, that's such a ridiculous thing to say. One of the difficult things was that we didn't know what happened to her because she'd baffled all the doctors. You know, they were like, we don't understand. We're just throwing everything at it, every antibiotic and every antiviral. But we can't seem to get on top of this thing. And so they had to do a post-mortem and then we had to go to an inquest.
Oh, God.
Which was only in February this year. So it was only in February we fully got the full picture that she caught an infection just before I went into labour. Like they said, it set in no more than 24 hours before I went into labour. And it was travelling up the umbilical cord and it would have triggered a response from me. So I would have created an immune response or I'd have been aware, but I was unwell because it had not reached me yet. And in that gap, I went into labour. And then we had a very quick labour, which panicked her more. So they say quick labour's good, but it's not always good. And then she'd passed meconium. So it was like this kind of a... They just said it was a catastrophic combination of all these different things that just got her. And
poor thing. So rough, isn't it? Like just such a horrible this like I did a grief class ages ago with Sophie Black, whose mum died, and she was saying, like, when they were trying to figure out, I think I'm pretty sure she had lung cancer but hadn't smoked, you know, and everyone was trying to work out quite what happened, and she went to see a consultant. And she was looking for this answer. You know, what's the answer? And the consultant said, look, human beings are spider webs.
Yeah.
And it's not one thing. It's like one little thing knocks that web down, that spine, and that goes and that goes. And she's like, then it collapses. Mm. But it's very hard for what we want in Western answers. Medicine is like, this is the thing that did it. You're always looking for logic because and so it's just really hard when it's something, like you said, just a terrible, catastrophic...
Yeah.
Traumatic circumstances.
And I think also, like, it's what was strange is as her mum being the, you know, she caught an infection in my body.
Yeah.
And that I found, I was reading back a journal that I'd written just after she died, and just the level of self-hatred I had and still have somewhere, I have to say. You know, just not like, and now it's sorted, but, you know, I've had some therapy and stuff is shifting, but like the level of self-loathing, hatred I had for myself and blame just immediately. And I remember when they said she was going to die at Great Ormond Street, and me and Alan went through. The first, as we walked over to her on the bed, I remember both of us just going, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And it was like just vomiting out of us. Like we couldn't, so we just kept going, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And we didn't even know what we were sorry for, you know, because we were just going, we're your parents and you're not, it was incredibly traumatic and just such a shock, you know.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons why I want to talk about it is because I find that when a baby dies so young, and when they spend most of their life dying, the only thing people can focus on is the fact they've died. And so they don't talk about them ever having lived. And I think that's a real shame in like Western culture. And I think it makes it very difficult for you as parents, because it's like denying their existence somehow. Some people have still family members, some people at work, not my main team, but other people and friends. Some of them have just never... acknowledged it because I just don't think they know how to. And I think someone said to me, and I thought this is so true, like you're kind of every parent's worst nightmare. And I was like, oh yeah, like I've had neighbours cross the street after she died because I could see them catch my eye and think, oh, I don't know what to say to her, so they just cross the street. But for me, it's quite disrespectful as well, because I go, Margot lived, Margot had a life, and I want to honour her life. Yeah. And it might have been 24 hours long, but she still lived and she still existed, and she has a birth certificate and she has a death certificate, like we'll all have. And yeah, that's important. And I think just trying to talk about babies that have died, I think is really important to acknowledge that they lived, not just that they died.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I interviewed Rob Delaney a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, I've not brought myself to order his book yet, but I will. I've read the article.
You, though, of all people, may take a break from that. You don't need to read that straight away. But yeah, he was saying, we were talking about that, you know, and we talk about a lot on the show. People just find it so hard. They don't know what to say. But he said, really what you're asking is 4 seconds. 4 seconds.
Exactly.
Of like, I want to say, how are you? Well, this happened.
Yeah.
And I need I need you to give me 4 seconds of...
I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like, if you can't fucking give me four seconds.
Yes.
And I brought up on the chat at the... I interviewed him at the South Bank Centre, which isn't a grief cast. Lots of listeners were like, oh, great, can't wait to hear it. I was like, no, it's not a grief cast. It was for his book. I brought up another episode with death doula Anna Lyons, who's this amazing woman who's part of Life, Death, Whatever, Death Positive Movement. And she described it really well, of like, what you're saying when you don't give 4 seconds is your pain so unbearable that I can't even be near it, which means you must bear it alone.
Yeah.
And that is like the most, to have to lose your baby, to have your baby die after 24 hours, that's awful.
Yeah.
But to then have other people go, well, I won't be near you.
To not acknowledge that. Yeah.
Like you said, as to the isolation, the self-loathing that's already there, you're adding more shit onto the awful situation. And I get it. It's not easy to talk about. It's hard. It's hard and it's painful, and it makes you hold your breath, and it makes you want to grab your children. You know, all of that stuff is understandable. But yeah, if you can give 4 seconds of like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and there's no wrong thing to say, but just to say something. And and at Margot's funeral, I spoke at her funeral. And one of the reasons why I did that was because I thought at an adult's funeral, you would do a eulogy where you talk about their life.
Yeah.
And I want to do that for Margot because I knew her life better than anyone. Yeah. And her life was short, but it happened. And I talked about the things she achieved in her life.
Oh.
And I said at the beginning, you know, we will spend our lives going... thinking of, you know, oh, this would be the time she'd be at school, or this, of course we'll do that, but I don't want to sit here and just talk about those lost moments and the fact she's died. I want to talk about the fact she lived, and I want to share with you some things she did in her 24 hours alive, because she did quite a lot. She was quite busy. And that's why I love talking to my niece about her, because my niece just... the first thing, Ellie, I mean, she's come up with some... It's interesting, because obviously this was sort of a year or so ago, And so she's changed now, because obviously kids change very quickly. But some of the things she, you know, one of the first things she asked me was, like, literally this was like the day, for one of the first days I saw her, she said, Chaz, she calls me Auntie Chaz, when Margot was alive, I know she only lived for a day, but did she get to eat anything on that day, like pasta? And I was like, I just love the idea of her, like, quick, you know, fitting in a quick spag bowl in between her antibiotics. But and you know, and she'd asked me what she was wearing and what she was like, and didn't just talk about the fact, she did ask a lot of questions about her dying. She asked me what she looked like when she died. She asked me what the room was like in that she died and stuff like that. But she also asked a lot about her life and what she was doing, and if I heard her laugh and if I heard her cry and things like that.
I suppose, and we talked about this actually with Rob Delaney, that children don't have the etiquette built in yet.
Yeah.
Or I shouldn't, or this will be more painful. And so they ask actually questions that everybody wonders.
Exactly.
Of like, oh, I wonder what it was like when that happened. Oh, I can't ask her that. And like you said, it's interesting because the politeness ends up denying Margot.
Yes, yes.
And ends up being like, well, I mustn't say, were you dressed when you held her? What was she wearing?
Yeah.
And what was the room warm? Like, did they look after you? Like,
because
I can't possibly ask her that. Like, and obviously, you've got to be sensitive.
Children can get
away with more stuff than adults can. But it is that thing of like, what are you... Yeah, I wrote about this in my book as well. Like, what are you hiding from, and what are you protecting yourself from? Like, that's really what those questions
exactly
are sometimes. Yeah. And so you go, oh, I'd like to know that, but I'm afraid, so I'm not going to ask.
Yeah, and I do understand that as well. I kind of go, I can't really remember the person I was before Margot.
Yeah.
But I probably was I probably was a bit of that, you know. And I, so it's not like I'm not empathetic to that, and I don't go, you know, how dare they? But I suppose that's why I like to talk about it, because I like to try and get a message out, like, say something, like you said, Bob Delaney said, you know, say something, just fucking say something. And it's, by not saying something, it's much harder, because it just sits in the space between you and that person. You turn up. There's people who saw me and I'd be, you know, really heavily pregnant. The next time I see me, they know, I've said to them, my baby's died. This is what she was called. This is how she died. I'm very open about talking about it. And they've just not said anything to me. So I've even tried to set the tone and they've not gone, you know, they're just not.
Yeah, opened the door. You've said, look, I'm telling you, I'm not like, I'm the person not mentioning it.
Yeah, like, I've kind of gone, you know, and I want to talk about, because she was my daughter, and so I'll always want to talk about her.
Yeah.
But then you know, for you to not even go, like, if she'd lived, I'm not saying we'd have had a, you know, full on blown chat about it, but you'd probably said, oh, congratulations on your baby. How's it going? Yeah, it's going all right, thanks, you know. But to just ignore the fact that she ever lived, I find very, very difficult, because she did live, and she, you know, she had a whole life. It was very short, but she had one.
Yeah. And even, I think as well, what you're just discussing is existence, isn't it, really? Because, you know, there are babies that are born or who have already died in that process.
Yes, yeah.
And I know sometimes it's referred to as born sleeping. But it's like, you're denying that it happened, that they were there.
Yes.
And that's that weird thing about pregnancy, isn't it? And I, you know, obviously there's that bit where no one knows you're pregnant, and it, you know, but you know, you, like you said, you carried her for all that time, and you got to that bit where she was a full baby. It was like that. Yeah. That looks like a baby.
Yeah, she was 7 pounds 8. She was chunky. She had double chin. So I was a bit addicted to chocolate yogurts the last trimester. You know, she was a. You look at pictures of her, and she's really big. You know, and that was another thing Illy said to, which made me howl with laughter. She was looking at photos on my phone, and she went, oh, you know, she does look better when she's dead, doesn't she, Jazz? I was like, but I know what she means, because she's not got her tubes in. She just looks like she's asleep. She weirdly looks better when she's dead. She actually does. She looks like she's got more colour. That sounds really messed up. And I remember going to see her in the morgue at Great Ormond Street and going, oh, she looks better than last time I saw her. But she's been dead 2 days, which is mad. What's interesting is, and yeah, maybe it's in terms of my mum, but like, I feel like I really felt like a difference in her when she was alive to when she was dead, and that's on. But even though I didn't get to know her character much on the outside, she does look quite different, and I think you do.
Yeah,
look quite different when you're dead. I think when your soul's gone, I felt like a soul had gone, even though I didn't get to know it that much. But I felt that definitely more with my mum, but because I knew her better, obviously.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because I've seen a few dead bodies, and I know that feeling of like when they're dead. You're like, oh wow, they're gone.
They've really gone. Yes.
And of course, why wouldn't a baby have the same thing? Because we use the word baby like it's not Margot. Like, why wouldn't Margot be the same as someone who was breathing and now isn't breathing, and that bit of them isn't in the body anymore.
Yeah.
And that's what you see when someone's dead.
Yeah.
An adult is dead.
It's just easy to recognise because you know them more. Alive.
Yeah, you've got such a comparison of like, oh, well, I know they sound like this.
They don't look like that.
Yeah, and, yeah. Whereas, it's obviously a brand new person that you're just meeting.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that they're not, their Margot-ness is not.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not in the body anymore, in their body.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Charlotte, I mean, it's just, what a fuck. What a fucking load to deal with. Yeah. That is just. And then, so that happened in July.
July, yeah, 21.
21.
So, yeah, not
so you obviously hit this, like you said, this incredible grief, self-loathing, I mean, I'm sure anyone can imagine how awful that was.
Mm.
And then 4 months later?
7 months. So
7 months later.
In the February of 2022, so we just had Margot's inquest, and it was 2 weeks after Margot's inquest when I felt like, it's not like you go, oh, I've had an inquest now, I can move on. Those are markers in the sand, I think, of going, I've concluded everything I'm going to know about her story. I've asked every question there is to know, and I understand as much as I'm ever going to understand about why she died, because we don't have all the answers. But and then my mum, she visited London. She lives in Yorkshire, where I grew up, and she was staying with my sister, and she's looking after Illy and Rex, my niece and nephew. And she just said to her, she'd had a bitter backache. She'd said it to my sister, she hadn't said it to me.
Yeah.
My sister's the eldest, so I felt a bit like she'd kind of, and then my sister had immediately texted me and my brother going, oh, have you heard mum's got a bit of backache? because we just share everything in our family. And she'd said, oh, I might go to the doctor's because I just sort of feel like it's not really going away. But it definitely nothing to write home about, you know.
Yeah.
And then she came to stay with us, and she just woke up one day and her skin just looked quite yellow and her eyes looked quite yellow. And so I said, well, me and my brother and my sister said, you know, I think we should go to A&E. So my sister took us to Homerton A&E. And I remember I was at a theatre at night with some friends, and I met my friend Freya on the South Bank, and as soon as I saw her, I just burst into tears and I went, I think my mum's really, really unwell. And it was like I just knew, but then at the same time I didn't know I was doing the anxiety thing because of what happened with Margot, just going, because I definitely have that now, like in such a ridiculous way.
God, of course
I know you talk
do.
About this like death
do.
Anxiety, yeah. But mine is off the scale at the minute. But I didn't have it so much after Margot in a way, because it was so, I did, but not, you know, it was so freak. And then I just, and my friend said, no, you know, wait and see, like it could be gallstones. Because I'd, you know, obviously Googled it.
Googled
that's just the way
my
brain works. And I'd gone, oh, pancreatic cancer, oh God. Or, oh, gallstones, let's hope. And then I got a phone call on the way back from my sister saying, could you call me when you get off the tube?
Oh God.
And it came through when I was at Finsbury Park Station and I just fell to the floor and I just howled on the tube. And this woman came over and she was lovely and she just gave me a tissue and I just went, I think my mum's really, really sick. And she just was like, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry about that. And gave me a tissue. And I remember I kept trying to hand... I kept trying to hand them back. Like, she was like, just take the tissues.
I don't need them.
Yeah.
You know what?
You know, just something
you
like,
need them
just
today.
Weird moments. You're like, what was that? And then I got off the tube among my sister and they said... Because my mum had to find out on her own because of COVID regulations.
God.
Which, frustratingly... And so they'd said they'd found a mass in her pancreas and stuff in her liver.
Yeah.
And immediately I just went... I remember saying to my sister, oh, she's fucked. She's fucked. She's fucked. Like, I couldn't stop saying it. She was like, Charlotte, stop, stop, stop. And I was like, she's fucked. She's fucked. She's fucked. Because also I had another friend whose mum had died of pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
And I just know, like, liver and et cetera. And I just went into meltdown. So me and my sister went to Homerton. And my brother was on the phone. He lives a bit further away. And, it was... They just said it was extensive and it kind of spread already, obviously. And she was very... she was in herself. She was like, but I feel absolutely fine. This is so weird.
Yeah.
I feel fine. She's like, I'm yellow, but I don't feel anything.
Yeah.
And so then they had to do more investigation. And very quickly they said it was inoperable because it was wrapped around the blood vessels.
Right.
And but they had said initially, I think that's when we first spoke, and I was saying, oh, you know, said they could have, should have chemo and that'll work for 7 to 8 months.
Right.
And you were like, that's good. I was like, yeah, that's quite good. You know?
Great, great.
But then she just got infections. She kept getting infections.
Yeah.
And... she had a stent put in and that then ended up with an E. coli infection.
Oh, God.
As a bit of a complication of that, they think. And then that went septic. So she ended up being admitted to hospital with sepsis at the beginning of May. And we thought that that was very much like touch and go at that point. You know, we don't know.
Yeah.
And then she kind of got better. And then, not better, but sort of recovered from the sepsis. And then we took her home to Yorkshire because by that point they'd said... they were signing her off. Stop what you're saying.
Yeah.
Releasing her, whatever.
Yeah.
But with like less than 3 months to live.
Right.
They'd said she couldn't have chemo because she was too jaundiced, so she wasn't going to be well enough. But they'd also said, you know, she's fit, she's healthy.
Yeah.
We don't know. I went in the ambulance with her all the way back to Yorkshire.
Wow.
Which is the first time I've been in an ambulance since Margot.
Oh, God.
All kind of very connected. And when we arrived that next morning, she started shaking again. She had sepsis again. So she got admitted to Leeds Hospital and she was there. And then this infection would just not go. And it was that alongside the cancer. And then she moved to a hospice. She got moved to St Gemma's Hospice in Leeds, who were amazing and let me have my wedding there so she could see it.
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk about this because we were emailing. You were like, so she's in a hospice, but because you were preparing for this wedding and that was obviously like, we've had a shit year, now we're going to have this celebration, we're going to have some goodness, and you had to move it forward by...
Yeah, it was meant to be next May.
Right.
And then we moved it to the 25th of June, so my mum could be there.
Yeah.
And my mum, like, when she first got diagnosed, this is what makes me really sad, but like she said, when I went into the A&E, she just said, I just want to see you get married and have babies. And I said to her, Mum, you did see me have a baby.
Yeah.
And then I could see the fear in her eyes when I said that, a bit like...
Yeah.
And I said, well, Mum, I'm saying that because I don't know if I'll be able to have more babies. I don't know if, you know, I can't tell you that. And so anyway, we moved the wedding. And then the week before the wedding, the hospital rang us 5 a.m. and said, your mum's had a really bad night. And we don't think... You think she's maybe on the last few days. And that was 18th of June.
Oh, God.
And I was like, God. So I said to Alan... my partner, my brother and my sister were there, and I said, right, just shove your wedding outfit. It's in the back of the car and we'll go to, I don't know what we're doing. It was like 6 a.m. We drove to the hospital and then we were going to get married in the hospital with a chaplain, and they sort of arranged a chaplain to be there. And then, because they said she wasn't well enough to travel to the hospice at that point. And then she sort of perked back up and went, we think we can get her to hospice, let's get her to the hospice. And they were brilliant. And they got her to St. Gemma's Hospice. And as soon as we walked in the door, the hospice staff said, here, we've got a wedding today. What time do you want to get married?
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh, like an hour? And they were like, yeah, great. What do you need? We're going to do your buffet. We're going to get some decorations. Let us know where you want to do it. And they settled my mum. And then we just did it. We threw it, honestly. And like, that's what I love about my family, is like, we just kind of make shit happen.
Yeah.
We, against all the odds, and actually genuinely have a good time. And so we just went, right. So I got my friend Kim, who's amazing, to come and sing. She was singing at the wedding the next. She got a photographer. This is all in like 2 hours. She managed to get a professional photographer. She's a bit of a one woman machine. And she came and sang, and she brought some other decorations. She brought my brother a guitar, because my brother's a musician. He did all the music. My sister-in-law, Lara, stepped in as a celebrant. So I was like, you're the celebrant now. We'd all did it in our vows that we were doing ourselves. So we just did the whole thing in the hospice for my mum, exactly as we'd do the week after. I put my dress on. My sister walked me down the aisle, which was the hospice garden. And all the residents, all these dying residents, were like cheering us along. It was so mad.
It's like something from a Richard Curtis film.
Remember being like, this is the most surreal thing. But also, it was happy. Yeah. I can't describe it. It was, and that's again, like, I feel like my family, like, they, you know, we can really have happy and sad times side by side, and they both can exist. And that's what it reminded me of. My mum, they put flowers on mum's bed, and we did the whole thing in front of my mum. And we had photos, and we had cake, and, you know, and then like literally an hour after we got married, my mum started to deteriorate, and they said, stay in the room tonight. So we slept on the floor in the hospice room. Then she just kind of kept going, and she was holding out for the wedding, for the 25th of June wedding.
For the real deal.
Yeah.
She wanted to be there.
The real deal. She was. And she made it. She made it. So she didn't make it to the actual venue because she was too unwell to travel. But the morning of the wedding, so we slept in the hospice, me, my brother and my sister, on this weird row of chairs. It was really odd. We like reverted back to being kids. Like, I'm the middle child, so I was in the middle. And my brother, my sister, and all those old dynamics come out, you know. And so we stayed with my mum every day. We slept on her floor. Hospice were amazing. And then we, on the wedding day, I remember the night before my wedding day, the actual wedding day, going, oh God, mum, please don't die tonight. Please don't die. Because I thought, you've made it this far.
Don't die tonight. The day before my wedding.
And then I woke up and she just went, happy wedding day.
Oh.
And it was like she'd walked, you know, she'd held on to see. I knew she had. And I could see how bloody pleased with herself she was. she was really like,
I'm sitting there.
Yeah, mate.
What did I tell you?
Yeah.
What did I tell you? Yeah. I was going to be there.
And she got her hair done 2 days before the wedding day. She said she wanted her hair done. And all the hospice staff were like, okay. And then the doctor was like, this is for your wedding. She's preparing. And I was like, okay. But they were like, but we don't, you know, stuff can crash in. She's very ill.
Yeah.
But she just kept going. And on the wedding morning, I got ready then. Illy, my niece, who was my chief bridesmaid, I'm sure she'll tell you all about. She was there, my sister, some friends who did my hair and makeup. And
so she didn't make it to the venue, but she watched it, right?
Yeah, so they live streamed. Well, I actually got a friend, Ben Pugh, should give him a shout out because he's amazing. His mum also passed to pancreatic cancer, to come and film it.
Wow.
And last minute, he just dropped stuff, whatever he had on that Saturday, and came and did a 2-camera professional film setup.
Wow.
just for free, for like, as a favour, which was amazing. His mum had actually passed not long after his wedding day, he'd said, like 20 odd years ago. And he did this brilliant setup and came and did the whole thing. And then they put a massive telly in my mum's room.
Oh.
They decorated the room. Oh. And my mum and my sister watched it all on a live stream. And I gave her a wave like, on the camera. And yeah, it was. So she was there. She saw 2 weddings in a week. Yeah. Smashed
it. She got her own personal private wedding. And then she got to attend the
public
event.
She got private
event.
Screening.
Yeah, private screening. So you got married, then how long after that did she pass away?
So she passed away 5 days later.
Wow.
So then she actually kind of went on a bit. And actually, the day after the wedding, I said to Alan, I said, I think mum will like die today because I think that's what she's held on for. And he went, no, she'll give it a bit of time because she won't want it to be too close to the wedding day. And he was so right. And then
because she doesn't want you to be like crashing down straight away.
Yeah, she was like, you know, she'll. And but then Margot's anniversary was on the horizon. So I was kind of going, oh, and I kept thinking, what if she dies on Margot's birthday, 2nd of July? What if she dies on Margot's anniversary, 3rd of July? Then a part of my brain was like, what does it even matter? You know, who cares? Not who cares, but you know, when you're dealing with that stuff.
Yeah.
But she actually went on the 30th, yeah. So June, yeah. So we were with her in the room. We slept in the hospice the whole time. So we were with her when she died. And then I bounced straight into Margot's first anniversary, which was just a bit of a blur, to be honest.
I mean, it's so... I've talked to people before on this show about pregnancy and grief and, you know, discovering you're pregnant, then losing a parent and how that's intermingled. But for you, that must be such a... Like, you kind of had a year, or under a year, of grief for Margot, and then you have to deal with your mum.
Yeah.
Like, do you feel like... Where are you at in that grief space at the moment, I suppose, is all I can ask.
I think, I mean, if I'm honest, when my mum got diagnosed, I just thought, oh, I just want to die.
Yeah.
I did. I felt like, and you know, I'm not ashamed to admit that. I felt like that after Margot died as well. I remember after Margot died, sat about, I don't know, a week after she died, thinking, trigger warning here, but like, I remember thinking, okay, I either kill myself or I keep going.
Yeah.
I remember having a really direct word myself, going, I either choose not to be here or choose to be here. What are you going to do? And I thought, I'm going to choose to be here. And I remember making an active decision then to continue living. And I felt like that with my mum. But my mum, I just felt like, I was so angry.
Yeah.
And I'm still really angry.
Of course.
How can this happen in the same year? Yeah. Like, fuck off. Do you know what I mean? Like, literally, fuck you.
Yes, fuck off.
And I just... That anger's really hard, I think, but there isn't, I don't wish it on anyone, you know, it's not like I go, but I'm the only one of my kind of close friendship group to have experienced either of these losses, and I'm like, statistically, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Actually, I have had a friend who's lost a child, I should say that, but like in terms of the two together, and I think that like, I just kind of, I think where I am now is, I mean, I'm also pregnant again.
Yes, we should. I didn't know if you want to say that. Yeah, so you are
just
pregnant.
Just to throw in another cheeky.
Your second pregnancy.
Yeah, so I'm 4 months pregnant. So I was actually, weirdly, you know, you count your pregnancy from the first day of your last period.
Yeah.
That was the 3rd of July, which is Margot's anniversary. I know. How weird is that? Oh, spooky.
I kind of like that. I quite liked it,
yeah. So I got pregnant very shortly after my mum died. Which is kind of was hard in itself because I just wanted to tell my mum and talk to her, you know, because she's my best friend. But I think I kind of go, well, I've got something else I've got to look after now, not just myself. And that is a positive thing. So, yeah, it's up and down, isn't it? You know, some days are unbearable and some moments are unbearable. And then weirdly, by the afternoon, I'm like, okay, I can go to that meeting at work and I'll be fine. And I went back to work very quickly after both losses. Which is just the way my brain works. Yeah. That's what I wanted to do. That felt right. And my team are brilliant. And that kind of felt right. But it's hard. It's exhausting. Mm. That's the main thing.
Grief in itself, just isolated one person grief, is exhausting. Yeah. Being pregnant is exhausting. Yeah, so for what you've said, it's such a lot. And I remember, you know, like I said, we were emailing about talking about Margot. And then when you emailed me about your mum, I was like, oh, fuck. I was just like,
That's how I felt.
Oh, fucking hell. And I remember saying to you, like, just like, park this. Like, you go through this. And obviously, hoping and praying that it would be a longer journey.
Yeah.
But knowing my experience as well, my dad going yellow in the February, dead by the April.
Yeah.
And just thinking, oh, I hope maybe it'll be a bit longer. Because, I'm not surprised you're furious. It's infuriating to have to carry that much.
Yeah.
And it's just, all. This is the thing about grief, which the more I talk about it, the more I just think it isn't one thing. It's just lots of things at the same time. And you're having to carry them all. And so your arms get fucking exhausted. So I'm really swearing because I feel like this episode deserves a lot of swearing.
Before the child comes in.
Before the child comes in. Thank you for my moment.
Don't worry, she hears it all.
And like, to have to carry that. And obviously, the brilliance, how wonderful, congratulations that you're pregnant again. But it is...
It's anxious. It's not an easy, isn't it?
No.
I mean, it's like, when I find... I mean, every time, if I'm honest, I go and, you know, different people might feel different in their... I don't know, but I definitely go into every scan going, it's dead, it's dead, it's dead, it's dead, it's dead. And they go, there's a heartbeat. I go, oh, okay. And I feel relieved for about 24 hours. And then I spend the rest of the time in between those scans going, it's dead, it's dead, it's dead, it's dead. And it's protective, probably, and... But I find the language on it very hard. Like, I went to a pregnancy yoga class last night, which was good. But like, they're saying stuff like, you know, and in a few months' time, you'll have your baby in your arms. And I'm like, hopefully. I can't commit to it. And I was like, it's good. I think that's the right language. You know, we should all just assume that because it's probably quite toxic not to. But it's very, very hard to imagine it as a reality. Yeah. I cannot imagine it. And I am delighted, and I'm really, and I've always wanted to be a mum, like I really have. And Alan's got a son from a previous relationship, so he's a dad already, but like together, it was our first, Margot was our first child together. And yeah, it's just, yeah, it's not easy and it's not straightforward and it's one bit at a time, you know.
I think that's perfectly understandable. Yeah. Like once you know something, I talked about this with Rob Delaney as well, that when I, other parents say things to me like, oh, well, you know, when they're grown up and we're old, and I think, I hope you get old.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
I just can't. I'm like, why are you assuming you're going to be there?
I had a hilarious moment on the train the other day where there was a really old lady and the woman working on the train said, oh, we've all got to get old, haven't we? And I went, hopefully. And then a bit too intensely, and I think she was like, you're weird. But I was like I think I said, if we're lucky.
Yeah.
I was like, because I just can't. Yeah, the whole concept of all that is very different. And like people, and like, you know, Margot had obviously a ridiculous length of life compared to my mum, but my mum was still only 68. And,
yeah,
and you know, obviously your dad was in his 40s, wasn't he? And it's just, yeah, there's, it's all shit. And, yeah. And I think like, it's that thing of, with Margot, it was sudden death. And unexpected. With mum, it was an anticipatory grief and all that. And having experienced both very close together, it's all terrible. Like, it's all terrible. There's pros and cons as a way, pros being a light word, but like of both, really.
Yeah.
And I think, but they're very different experiences, I'd say. And,
And you know, as we say, like each grief is unique, and your relationship to Margot as her mum, you know, is a completely unique. Like no one else in the world has that. That's you and Margot's, and so that grief. And Philippa Perry said this as well. Like when they go, that's that relationship. You'll always be missing that bit of relationship. You won't.
Yeah.
You can't be Margot's mum.
Yeah.
You know, she's not there for you to be
the same way,
active mum. Yeah. But obviously, you will always be her mum. And for your mum to leave you, that's you know that relationship, and it's. That's the thing when you have multiple griefs of like you're dealing with different shapes of the same thing,
but all at the same time.
But all at the same time, so it's not like
mad,
and it's not like you know what you're doing because you're already grieving Margot. Like it's like no, it doesn't work like that because like you said, you want your mum there.
Yeah, I do, and I've just missed talking to her so much, and like, and also because the time frame was so close, but a year on, like we've had follow up chats with some of mum's team that have happened on a similar time frame to when we're having follow up chats with Margot's team, and it's all just very mixed together in this weird. You know, around autumn we had the theatre. I mean, mum didn't have a post-mortem, but, you know, just various things of that and trying to understand, you know, what happened and their journeys. And also, like, I think I get a lot of... I it's just my brain, but I just always feel guilty that... I feel guilty that mum experienced Margot's grief as well. As her mum, I feel responsible for putting that on my family.
Yeah.
And my mum was absolutely devastated, like just devastated when Margot died. Obviously, we all were. And I found that, like, I find that hard, you know, to know that at the end part of her life, she experienced a great loss, but I also know she would have absolutely wanted to, she wouldn't have wanted to miss it, as it were, because she did meet her and she had another granddaughter and she was named after her, which was amazing. And she wanted to be there for me. And I think in a way, like when I found out I was pregnant again, I thought, oh, I really want, you know, I'd wanted to be pregnant before and we hadn't been, you know, successful yet. And then it was a bit of a surprise when I actually was. Classic, don't try and it happens. And I thought, but then my sister made a good point of going, but mum would have wanted to be there for you through it. So for her to be dying knowing you were pregnant would have been actually really hard.
Yeah, yeah,
she'd have
yeah.
gone, oh, I know this is not going to be easy for you and I can't be there.
Yeah.
So, silver lining? I don't know.
I mean, this is it, isn't it? I think the more you walk with grief, the more you just, it's not anything. It just is grief.
Yeah.
Like, I think you spend so long with grief, like, with my dad, like, oh, it was good, he was very active, he wouldn't have liked to have been ill for a long time. yes that's true. And then I'm like 20 years down the line, I'm like, fuck off.
Yeah,
maybe he wouldn't have liked it. I would have liked
it.
He would have been annoyed, but we would have got more time. And
yeah,
and actually there's just
no winners
and there's no hard truth.
Yeah,
so we want it, like we said, we want it to be like it's this and therefore it's this. And it is so sad that your mum had that, just, you know, the year before she died, she lost a granddaughter.
Yeah.
That's a terrible sadness. Yeah. Equally, she would be overjoyed that now you're pregnant again. And equally, it's awful that she's not here to celebrate. Like, all of those things exist together. Yeah. And I think that's the thing with grief is it's so hard to hold all those things at the same time. And like you said, that's why with grief, you're crying 1 minute, laughing the next, because it is exactly both those things. It's joyous and shit.
Yeah.
At exactly the same time.
Yeah.
And we just find that so hard because we convince ourselves that life isn't like that. Like other things aren't like that. But actually, like, love is like that. Work is like that. Life is, oh, that's annoying. No, it's fine.
It's great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like it's, but we would like it to be not that, because then it would be a bit simpler. We could breathe and we could go, okay.
Yeah.
The grief, it's just awful. And you're like, well, why am I laughing?
Yeah.
Like, why? Oh, because I had this amazing mum that loved me so much. And I know, I can think in my head her reaction to everything.
Oh, like, and we, I mean, like me and my sister, it sounds weird, but me, Helen and Richard had like some funny moments in the hospice. Like, we all gave ourselves assigned roles. Like, my brother was head of tech because he did like all the kind of like iPad, anything to do with moving the bed or like anything to do with plugs.
Yeah.
My sister was head of cocktails because she would do like the smoothies or whatever mum wanted to drink. So I was head of beverages, I think she was. And I was head of tissues because I was like organising the tissues that mum needed. And then like when mum died, we all sat by mum's bed and we sat there for a little while and had a cup of tea and my sister said, you know, what happens now? And I was like, well, no more way around a funeral and a death now after Margot and my mother-in-law and everything. So I was like, well, what happens is, you know, this happens and then they come dead and then we get a death certificate and blah, blah. And Helen was like, oh, head of death. And, you know, we're like, I don't know, like, that's the thing. Yeah. You've got to. And I think the thing with Margot is, like, she was out the natural order of things, you know. She was a child. And I remember... Now, the hardest memory for me really about Margot is leaving her in the hospital when they said, you know, we need to take her down to the morgue now. And again, I've just given birth to this baby and every bit of me, she should be on, like physically I felt it. Physically I felt like I was missing something.
Yeah.
And what me and Alan said is like, and I said this at the funeral, is I feel like when you lose a child, they take a bit of your heart and forever, and that will always go, and that's as it should be. In my head, I'm like, as her mum, I wanted to have it.
Yeah.
I wanted to have that bit of my heart. But they also... in return, they give you a new set of eyes to see the world through. And that's what we both felt. We both felt like that was the most humbling day of our lives, the day she was born. Like, it really was. Seeing the people, the doctors, the Dr. Alija Gennady, should give him a shout out, hopefully I've said his name right, at Homerton, just amazing. And, like, just the care and the kind of... It really made us go, this is what's important in life, this is what isn't.
Yeah.
And... you know, I don't really want that trade-off. I'd like her to be here and have my heart full, but I think leaving her, just going, this, just everything felt wrong. I was like, I can't leave the room. Like, she's my child. Oh, she's meant, she's just been inside me, you know, 24 hours ago, and she should still be attached to me in some way, that first part. And I remember for ages, like, standing up on the bus or something and feeling like I'd left something behind. Yeah. And then my therapist being like, you're missing her. Your body's looking for her. And it did that for, honestly, about 6 months, where every time I stood up, I thought, I've left my bag. I've left my something. I've left something on the... I've left my keys. And it was her. And I'd just wake up in the night and go, where is she? And with my mum... It wasn't easier. It was kind of harder
different.
In lots of ways. But there was a thing about going, I knew this day would come.
Yeah.
That doesn't make it easy and it shouldn't be coming now. But like, I can make, my brain could somehow make some sort of peace with it.
Yeah.
And leaving her didn't feel like leaving her, because I didn't, she wasn't my responsibility.
Yeah.
Margot is my responsibility and should be with me.
Yeah.
And my mum, I want with me, you know.
I do.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. So thank you for joining us, Illy. Are you okay?
Yeah.
So you've got two lovely hearts on that table that are knitted. There's a blue knitted one, that's a bit bigger, and a little red knitted one. Would you mind telling me what they are?
So the blue one is because when my Nana died in the hospice, they gave us hearts so we can remember, and she has one in her coffin. And the little red one is for Margot, and where Ormond Street knitted those, and Margot's got one too.
Oh, that's so nice.
I've got a rocket sticker at the end of my bed.
Oh, and do you want to tell us about what the rocket means?
So when Margot died, I drew a rocket, and then Chaz asked me if it was for Margot, and I said yes, and then when she was getting driven to Great Ormond Street, she was in like a little blue cot, and so the rocket kind of became her symbol.
Yeah, it looked like a rocket, didn't it? The incubator looked like a rocket.
Oh,
and then I told Illy this, and then she'd drawn a rocket, which is the original drawing.
Oh, it's beautiful, Illy. Wow. Look at all those flames at the bottom going, making it go really fast as well.
And we gave them out at the funeral, didn't we?
Yeah. And I also drew a wedding rocket for when my auntie and my uncle got married.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
You did our wedding invite, didn't you?
A wedding rocket. Well, what better way to get to a wedding than a rocket? That's amazing. So has the rocket become a symbol? Is that why you've got a rocket tattoo
I saw there? I've got rocket earrings. You've got a rocket jumper. It's become a bit of a symbol, hasn't it? And at the wedding, we had rocket ice lollies, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Because Illy was a chief bridesmaid at the wedding.
So. Yeah. And what do you remember about Margot, Illy? So you remember your auntie being pregnant?
Yeah, because once we went to a restaurant I got to see Margot there.
Yeah, I went to the toilet, didn't I? Do you remember? We went to the toilet together and I was wearing a jumpsuit. And so when I pulled my jumpsuit down, I nearly went, whoa!
Did you see her big tummy?
I was massive then, wasn't I? I was overdue.
Oh, wow.
And you spoke to her, do you remember you spoke to her about her, told her to come out, she was taking a long time.
Yeah. And she was my only girl cousin, because all the others are boys.
Oh, yeah, it's nice to have a girl cousin, isn't it, if you've got all boys, yeah. So what happened to Margot? Do you remember what they told you?
My mummy said when she was coming out, she swallowed her poo, I think. And then she came out and she was really ill.
And what did you think when they told you that Margot had died? How did you feel?
I felt really upset because I was really looking forward to meeting her and seeing her.
Yeah, it's really sad, isn't it, that she died? It's a very sad thing. That's why we remember her with the rockets, so that we can keep her with us, isn't it? And did you have questions about Margot? Were you confused about what happened? Or did you laughing?
I had lots and lots of questions.
Yeah, it's good, it's all right to have questions. What sort of questions did you have?
I asked her, like, what time she was born. Like, and then one of the things I asked her, because pasta is my favourite food, one thing I asked Chaz is, did Margot get a chance to eat pasta? And Chaz said no.
That's really sad, isn't it? Because you love pasta loads and loads.
Yeah, because my dad's half Italian.
Oh, wow. So you get good pasta then?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is sad that Margot didn't get a chance to taste the really good pasta.
And I'd like her, if she had my pasta, I'd like it to be being carbonara, because that's my favourite.
Yeah, you did say that, actually. You said not even a carbonara, didn't you?
Yeah, well, that's right.
Do you remember what you said to me in the cafe when we came here, which I forgot you'd said?
Oh, if it was worth it, like, yeah.
You asked me, yeah, you said, didn't you? Chaz, was it worth it, even though Margot died?
Yeah.
What did I say?
You said yes.
What do you think? What do you think about it?
I think it was worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though she died and it's sad, it's still, she was still lived, didn't she? Yeah. So it's still important that we remember her.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be both things, can't it? But it's hard sometimes, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. If I want to talk to her, usually I'll talk to the sticker.
Yeah, that's nice. So you can still talk to her even though she's not here.
I'll tell her, like, got a new friend, or, like, maths was really fun today, even though I hate maths. And my first ever trumpet lesson or something like that.
Oh, wow. So she's getting to hear about everything you're doing.
Yeah. I think one of the things I also asked was what happens to her once the coffin's burnt.
Yeah.
I think one of the things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fair question. I think lots of people wonder that. What did you tell her, Tess?
I'm trying to remember. I think I said it sort of they go into ashes, so her body turns into ashes.
Yeah, I think you said it went into ashes and then you're going to sprinkle it in a special place.
Yeah, though actually we've kept them at home now, haven't we? Yeah. She lives at home at the minute in her memory box.
We did a run for Great Ormond Street a few weeks ago and it was in Hyde Park, and on the back of our T-shirts I do some pictures with baby Margot in the middle and Team Margot on it.
Oh, Team Margot.
We had them pinned to our back.
Oh, that's amazing.
And they had flamingos on, didn't they? Because she was on the flamingo ward.
Yeah.
So Illy's really good at drawing flamingos. And you wrote a letter to her. Actually, I brought a letter.
Did I?
Yeah, do you remember this? I don't remember this. Do you want to read it? Or you can just look at it if you want. So this was a year ago and a lot's happened in a child.
I never realised that my handwriting was so terrible.
You were much younger.
This was a year ago, you're only six.
Interesting.
Do you want me to read it? All right.
Yes.
So it says, "Dear Margot, we are all going to miss you lots. I want you to know we love you. You make me feel happy every cold day. Your mum and dad are very, very sad. We all love you lots. From Illy."
Oh, that's really lovely. What a nice letter.
So that sits in her memory box at home.
When did you write that, Illy? Was it just after she died?
Well, I think it's like a few weeks after.
Yeah. Was it a bit confusing when it happened?
Yeah, because I didn't really know what's going on, because nothing like that had really happened before. Because at school, no one really thinks about it as, like, serious. Everyone, because, like, all the boys are just playing games, pretending to shoot each other with guns and stuff. So it's just kind of a bit weird that it actually did happen.
Yeah, it's like almost like something you might see on a film or on telly, but not, or you might pretend it in the playground, right?
Yeah.
But to actually know that you knew someone who died can be a bit tricky, can't it?
But you always tell people about Margot, don't you? Like,
yeah.
Illy goes, she's my cousin, and... That's what is lovely, isn't it, is that you don't... Because I was saying to Cariad that sometimes adults don't talk to me about Margot because they don't know what to say, because they feel a bit awkward. But what's so nice about you is that you talk about Margot all the time and you'll say, yeah, Margot's my cousin.
Also, once my best friend Betty asked her if I could talk to her about Margot after she died. And I said, oh, only 5 minutes and our break was 15 minutes. And I ended up talking to her for the whole playtime instead of 5 minutes.
About Margot?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. That's nice you got someone else that you can talk to about her as well. As well,
I didn't realise that I actually knew so much about Margot until I actually talked to her.
What were you telling her about it?
I don't know. I think I told her that she died and something else and something else. I can't remember.
Well, you probably know a lot about Margot, don't you? Because you were there when she was alive.
Yeah.
You've been there for this whole time afterwards.
I never got to meet her, but I did I did see her on photographs and things.
Yeah.
My mum and dad went to visit her, but...
Yeah, and even though you didn't meet her, she still was your cousin, wasn't she?
Yeah.
That's always going to be true. And then you recently lost your nana as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
I'm very sorry about that. That's really sad.
Yeah. She had pancreatic cancer, and I think she was 68.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to see her in the hospital?
Yeah, I did once, because when my auntie got married, we went round to show her our bridesmaid dresses, and Nana, like, we thought she could come, but then she couldn't, so she stayed at the hospice and watched with the TV. My mum stayed with her, and then my mum came for the party.
Oh, nice.
Stayed with her for the ceremony.
She came for the dancing.
Yeah.
And how do you feel about Nana now? Do you talk to her?
Well, usually I can get my heart and talk to her through that.
Yeah.
Or, when I'm doing my homework and there's a difficult sum, sometimes I try to ask Nana the answer to it.
Nana was no good at maths, so.
Is she?
No, she was rubbish at maths. She was good at English.
I'm rubbish at maths.
Yeah, don't ask her for the answers.
I'm rubbish at maths.
She might like that you're asking her.
She'd try.
Or she might say, oh, go on, Ills, you can do it. Give you a bit of encouragement.
Yeah, she would, wouldn't she?
It's nice that you've got the heart then. Is that really important to you, do you think? That
I keep it on my shelf because I found out that if I cuddle it, it gets a bit dirty.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get ill, it gets lost under the covers.
Yeah, you've got to be careful.
We were talking on the way here, weren't we, about what Nana was like.
Were we?
And said she was very silly.
Was she very silly?
I thought she was silly. Did you not think she was silly?
She was fun.
Fun, yeah.
Did she make you laugh, Illy?
Well, there's one time where we were playing charades and my grandma did an impression of a duck and it took us like 20 minutes to guess it, and in the end we just had to get her to tell us, and it was like, we were like, a whale, a humpback whale, a cat, a dog, and we couldn't guess it. And it took us ages, and Nana was like, it's so obvious, it's a duck. And we were like, how was that meant to be a duck? She was like, it's obvious. And it was not obvious.
She needed to work on the duck impression. Yeah. Yeah, a bit more practice on that.
It looked like she was trying to, like, dig a hole under the ground with her belly.
I can imagine that, actually, yeah. How did it come to that? And we talked a bit, didn't we, about, like, well, you've got a theory about the cloud world.
Yeah, so I believe when people go up into the sky, all the kind people go to bright clouds and all the bad people go to the dark clouds. And I think, Nana, because also my great-grandma died when I was little, and I believe, like, so when Margot went up there because... my great-grandma didn't know about her. I think all the babies go to an orphanage until someone they know and comes up and takes them to the house. So I think Nana went up to get Margot, and then they've gone to live in my great-grandma's house.
Oh, that's nice. So Margot would have been waiting for a little bit, and then your Nana would have come up and said, I'm here with my great duck impression. And Margot would have said, is it a whale? Is it a humpback whale? And your Nana would have said, it's a duck. Because she probably, do you think she would have got better at the duck impression when she went to the clouds?
Not really. Didn't think she had time to practice.
Yeah, poor Margot. We bet she was guessing for ages.
30 minutes.
at least 30 minutes. That's a lovely thought that that Margot was waiting for your Nana up there, and then they're together with your great-grandma as well.
Yeah.
So you think
that... Also, there's one memory that I don't know why, but I can't get out of my head. So when I was, like, 5 and I used to like Frozen, my grandma would buy me these Olaf ice lollies, and they were, like, 2 scoops of vanilla and some chocolate hands and stuff, and they were Olaf. And my grandma used to pretend she was going to eat mine, and... I just really enjoyed them. I don't know why.
That's really
she
nice.
She liked buying things for you, didn't she?
Yeah, that's what grandmas do. Yeah, like buying things.
Lots of gimmicky things as well.
Yeah. Have you got something that she gave you that you keep with you as well?
There's these So I have an old sunglasses box, and I put like memories of Nana in there. Maybe in a letter. So it's a private thing, and everything like. A letter to her, a drawn picture of her, and I've got a necklace with a gold chain and like a bit of a third of a circle on it, and it's got Alyssa's name on it, and Chaz got one with her name on it, and Mummy's got one with her name on it. If you put them all together, it makes a circle.
Oh, that's lovely.
Auntie Frankie got us that, didn't she? The hospice.
She?
Yeah, Auntie Frankie bought them for me, Nana and Mummy.
That's a really special thing. So you're going to keep that,
yeah,
so you can remember her. And did you have a funeral? Is she buried?
Her mum was cremated. Yeah, so we did have a funeral. So you didn't come to Margot's funeral, did you? But you came to the party.
I came to Margot's
party, as we call it. And because we handed out these rocket cards, so lots of people, when Illy came into the funeral, went, are you the girl that drew the rocket? It's like you were famous, wasn't it?
You
were like, yeah. But you came to Nana's funeral, didn't you?
Yeah, because Margot's one was a bit too upsetting, so yeah. I went to
It was the first one as well, wasn't it? Yeah. You went to Nana's. You wanted to go to Nana's, didn't you?
Yeah, because I wanted to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And at the end, all the family got to go up and touch Nana's coffin. And then we went outside and had a party. That's and my nice. Brother, literally, in the first 2 minutes, he was like, Mummy, can I go outside now? So my grandma had to take him out. My other step-grandma had to just take him out. And they just made a massive collection of pine cones and...
Yeah, he's a bit littler than you, isn't he? So it is tricky to sit still for that time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Was it sad at the funeral? Did you find it hard, or were you glad you were there?
I was glad I was there, but at the same time, I was really upset.
Yeah, it's really
and
sad.
And also, when my grandma was in the hospice, my dad recorded me reading Harry Potter, the first one, and then she could listen to that.
Oh, Illy, that's so amazing. What a lovely thing for her to listen to.
And at the end of my mum's speech in the funeral, she added a bit of the end of the Harry Potter bit, and it's like Dumbledore saying to Harry, like, your mother died to save you, Harry, and like...
Because she loved you, wasn't it? It's like about a mother's love.
Yeah.
That's really
Yeah, we
nice.
Listened to that every night in the hospice, and Nana would often go, Illy. As in, Illy, we call like... Put it on and we'd all sit and listen to it together.
Oh, that's so nice.
And at the end of it, do you remember what he said at the end of every bit?
I love you, Nana, I think.
Yeah. Oh. It was like a little pause to it. I love you, Nana.
Oh, that must have made her feel really lovely in the hospice to have that.
It did, yeah.
To remember, because I bet she loved you so much. I bet she was
keen
on you.
Obsessed. I'd ring Mum for a call, and then I could hear the iPad going in the background. I'd go, she'd go, oh, I go, Mum, do you want to go and FaceTime the kids? Yeah. We were bumped off as soon as this one came along. She was like, oh yeah, but Illy's FaceTiming, so I'm going to have to go, bye. Didn't she? She loved you loads.
No, that's really nice. That's really lovely that she loved you that much. And it's really sad that she's not here, but at least you can remember all that lovely love that she gave you and have your memory box and your woolen heart. And it's really sad that Margot's not here as well, but we can remember her, can't we?
Remember both of them.
Yeah, it's important. So we don't forget them, because sometimes the world makes us feel like we need to forget them and they don't ask questions. So I think it's lovely that you're still talking about them. But only when you want to, obviously, because sometimes you just want a day of not feeling like crying. Sometimes you don't want to be sad, and that's okay too, isn't it?
Yeah,
we'll have funny conversations about them, won't we, as well?
Yeah.
It's like about what we think they're doing up there together. Like, oh, they're doing this now. And
also now you're going to have a new baby.
Yeah.
Are you excited about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you are hoping for a girl cousin.
Oh, pressure.
The pressure's on for Chaz. If it's a boy cousin, will you still love it?
Yeah. But maybe not so much as I'd love a girl.
What a kid. She's amazing.
I know. I just love talking to her, but I think she's... Yeah, I mean, yeah.
The rocket thing is so... I mean, I didn't want to bore my eyes out in front of it, but it's very... So what happened? She drew this rocket and just said...
Actually, yeah, there's a bit more of a story with that. So they're called baby pods, and she was putting them, and then she had all these wires coming out of her head, and she was putting an angle in the ambulance. And I said it looked like she was in a little rocket, and she was an astronaut. And so Illy then went upstairs, and because I was crying, I'd been downstairs. And me and Hel, like, my sister, has always like, it's fine to cry in front of the kids, because it's really sad. I don't want to be like... going to a room and crying now and don't tell them you're sad about your daughter. And so we were crying outside in the garden, and she just came out and went, "Auntie Chaz, I've drawn this," and she drew the rocket, and I just loved it, and then it's kind of snowballed this rocket. So I made these stickers for the funeral, and then there's a little card I've brought you on, which has got a picture of Margot in, and on the back we wrote, if I only lived a day, I would ... and got everyone to fill it out as like a memento of like, if you only had a day like Margot had, how would you spend it, what's important to you in life, and put the rocket on which was nice to have something like buy a child at a child's funeral. Yeah, you know, yeah. It kind of made it more, I didn't want to do an order service. I don't know, yeah, it felt weird.
Yeah.
And also I wasn't really in the headspace to. But then I tweeted about the rocket and the company that made the baby pod contacted me and said, oh, like, this is amazing. And then they framed a picture of it and put it in their actual workshop where they make the actual rockets.
Oh, oh my God. I know, God.
Which is amazing. It's called AHT. And yeah, and they've put up Illy's rocket in their workshop, and it's sort of become this symbol,
wow,
of Margot, and I think because obviously, you know, she drew it, and
there's something so beautiful about that. There aren't many words, are there, of just like a baby in a rocket? Like, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to send them somewhere really.
Yeah, and we had Rocket Man at her funeral. We played Rocket Man at her funeral, and. Yeah, and like I say, I've got a rocket tattoo. Alan got a rocket tattoo. His rocket tattoo is actually really big, and it's of the drawing. It's got the colours of...
Wow.
So Illy thinks it's really cool that Uncle Alan's got her actual drawing on his back.
She's a published artist at 7 years old.
Totally. And it's just kind of become a... It's nice to have a symbol. And rockets are everywhere at the minute. We're like kids' clothes. They're everywhere. So like, I know she was wearing a rocket jumper then. So it's quite nice that whenever anyone sees a rocket or hears Rocket Man, they think they always text me and say, I'm just thinking of Margot and...
Oh, Charlotte, thank you so much for coming to talk to me about Margot and your mum. And I know you mentioned your mother-in-law as well and your auntie as well. And I know we didn't get a chance to speak about them as well, but I'm staggered from what you've been through. And I know it always seems like a trite thing to say, but the fact that you are handling it the way you are and that you've made that choice to live and be here, I'm very, very glad. Thank you.
Oh, good. Can I give one shout out to some babies?
Yeah.
Which is some babies who... So I've had friends who've lost children and also since losing Margot met some other friends who've lost babies. So I just wanted to say their names.
Yeah,
that's okay
do.
As well. Which is Luna Ben, Chloe Kelly, Ted Robson and Charlie Rendell. And they're Margot's friends in this, wherever she is.
Thank you so much to Charlotte and to Illy for coming in to speak to me, and Illy's mum as well, who was there on the day. I'm just going to say, I said at the beginning, but they have an amazing, a fund you can donate to. It is the Margot Alicia Bennett Brighter Future Fund. They set up to raise money for Great Ormond Street Hospital after Margot died. So the link to that is www.justgiving.com/team/Margot, M-A-R-G-O-T. Please do donate to that. Obviously, Great Ormond Street is an incredible, incredible hospital and does amazing work in this country as well. A huge thank you to Charlotte and Illy for coming in to share their story. You can follow Charlotte's Theatre Company on Twitter at Payne's Plough. That's P-A-I-N-E-S. P-L-O-U-G-H. You can also follow Charlotte on Twitter at Char Bennett, C-H-A-R-R-R, Bennett, B-E-N-N-E-T-T. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was recorded at Whistledown Studios. Thank you, Whistledown, as ever, for your support and help. It was edited by Kate Holland. The music was provided by The Glue Ensemble. I think that's everything I need to tell you. Thank you so much for listening to this really, really special episode. I hope you enjoyed it, found it helpful. We never have the right word, do we? But enjoy, if you know what I mean. And remember, you are not alone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.